I'm a werewolf.
Tomorrow night's the full moon. You're gonna change. You'll become...
I know. A monster.
You've gotta kill yourself, David. Before it's too late.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus American Werewolf retrospective series.
Everybody dies in it. Very bloody.
Hosted by Jacob.
I thought you'd be glad to see me.
Stuart.
I find you very attractive and a little bit sad.
And Arnie.
I love you, Americans. What great taste you have.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Please, remain sane.
At least until you're no longer our responsibility.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Beware the moon, and stick to the road.
Today we're discussing An American Werewolf in Paris, starring Tom Everett Scott, Julie Delpy, Vince Villeneuve, Phil Buckman, Julie Bowen, directed by Anthony Waller. This is the Now Playing co-host who has issues, major issues, Arnie.
And Stuart.
This is Jacob. When you're counting up my Daredevil points, remember to add my podcast points.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, you have a lot of podcast points. Didn't congratulate you, but you've done over 1,000 movie reviews with us here on Now Playing, so... A lot of podcast points.
And a lot of Daredevil points for reviewing films like this.
And Daredevil, for that matter. But yes, where will this fall in the 1,000 movies that you've covered? I heard a lot of hate last week. I've heard that this movie was... I don't remember much about it coming out, but they didn't give it much of a chance either. Christmas 1997? Why would you release this at Christmas?
Is that why we're doing this at this time of year? It's a Christmas movie?
Yeah. I guess it was.
Yeah, they released this in the UK on Halloween in 1997, so that makes sense to me. But why they opened it on Christmas in the States against, you know, Titanic was ruling the box office at that time.
It opened seventh place. Yeah, it was behind Jackie Brown, As Good As It Gets. Even Scream 2, which had been out for a month, was beating it. Yeah, it wasn't even the horror movie that people were going to see at Christmas time. Beyond that, it's 16 years beyond the original, and Landis is not even involved. I mean, is this even a sequel? I'll ask that question.
Landis started the process here. Initially, a studio went to Landis and said to Landis, "We want you to write a sequel and make a sequel to... American Werewolf," and he wrote an entire script that focused on the character Debbie Klein. Who is Debbie Klein? At the very beginning of American Werewolf in London, Jack is talking about how he loves Debbie Klein and there's nothing average about her body and all of that. Well, she was going to get a job in London and investigate what happened to her friends David and Jack. And they were going to bring back David and Jack as ghosts. They were going to bring back Jenny Agutter as Alex. The doctor was going to return. And the studio said, "No, we don't like this idea. Go make another one." And Landis said, "Forget it. Make the sequel without me." So Landis owned the property. But when he got a cold shoulder to his idea, then... he just shrugged his shoulders and went off to do, I mean, utter shit films. Can we just say, John Landis's filmography is no better than the movie we're here to discuss today. When you look at what he was doing around this time, he did The Stupids in 1996 and Blues Brothers 2000 in 1998. I've seen both those films, and I would rather rewatch American Werewolf in Paris than watch either of those actual John Landis films.
I will not slander Blues Brothers 2000.
Blues Brothers 2000 is a turd.
Nope.
I can't stand that movie. Oh my fucking God, do I hate it.
Well, whatever he was in the 90s, he did have a very solid record in the early 80s. And, you know, I don't know. These films you mentioned are not ones that I want to see. But I think that there's always something about bringing the creator back to their project. And when you hand it off to new hands, it's probably not going to feel very connected to the original. And that certainly is the case.
I would say, except that original set up such weird lore for a werewolf story with the victims coming back as the undead. Like, when this does that again, like, it feels very connected. Like, it is supposed to be a sequel to that thing.
Yeah, it went through a lot of different hands at that point. You'll notice that there are three credited writers. There's Tim Burns, Tom Stern, and then the director, Anthony Waller. There were actually a lot more writers who worked on this thing. It went through a lot of iterations, and it was in like 94 that Stern and Burns worked on it. And it involved an American named Andy who had to go to Paris when his uncle was attacked by a beast there. And there was going to be a lot more moon music in it and things. And they got pretty far along. They were going to direct the film as well as write it. And they were going to do it for like $10 million. But then when the budget blew up to like $25 million, the studio's like, we need a director who has more experience than you two guys. So that's when they turned to Anthony Waller.
Who's not a name that I recognize, but I did see his breakout film. He got a lot of hype. I saw it in theaters, Mute Witness. Overrated. I remember even at the time I watched this movie. It's a mute makeup woman on a movie shoot finds out they're shooting a snuff film. They're shooting on location in like a Slavic country. I think it's Moscow.
Moscow. Yeah, I watched this yesterday. It's in Moscow.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, like, it has kind of a cool setup, and I remember, like, thinking it was going to be cool, and then it just kind of gets slapsticky and stupid. Part of its bragging rights was it has the very last film appearance of Alec Guinness, and, you know, that sounds like a big deal. Oh my god, what's he going to do in a movie about snuff movie making? Well, nothing. He's going to drive up in a car and say two lines and then drive away with a paycheck. I don't remember liking it.
Actually, no. He doesn't drive away with a paycheck. I watched this film because after watching American Werewolf in Paris, I wanted to know what got Anthony Waller this gig. So I watched Mute Witness, saw Alec Guinness in it. I'm like, he was dead when this movie was made. A decade before making Mute Witness, Anthony Waller ran into Alec Guinness and was like, I'm going to make a film. Will you be in it? And Alec Guinness said, I'm leaving the country tomorrow. And Waller said, I'll film you in the morning and I'll pay you. And Alec Guinness said, listen, I'll film your scene. Just don't credit me in the movie. Don't use me to advertise the movie. And I won't take a paycheck. And so In the mid-80s, without knowing what the movie really was going to be, Anthony Waller set up a camera overnight to film Alec Guinness in a car and get two scenes with Alec Guinness and then used it in a movie 10 years later.
That's what it feels like. Like, you see that scene and it comes out of nowhere and you're like, what? Why is, what the hell? Obi-Wan, what are you doing? And he's gone. He has two scenes? I don't remember it that way.
He shows up at the very end. They used, I think, some of the same footage reversed, but... And then I think they shot a double from behind.
He puts the car in reverse and goes backwards out of the film.
Not a very satisfying movie. An awkward kind of horror comedy. Like, it's tried for some... It got goofier and goofier. As I recall, I was into it. And then by the halfway mark, I was like, meh. And by the end of it, I pretty much hated the film.
And I'll say that the film is okay. I'll agree with you. I was really into it at the beginning. The thought of a person who can't talk, witnessing a snuff film being made on a film set and then trying to run around and communicate that. And of course, she's using sign language and computers and things.
She couldn't just write it down?
And she's telling people, but nobody's believing her. She can't scream for help when she's being chased. I thought there was some good suspense there, but it doesn't hold. It just gets ridiculous. All of a sudden, everybody's looking for a diskette that becomes a weird MacGuffin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's like a spy caper by the end of it. It doesn't have anything to do with snuff. Yeah, it's just unsatisfying is the word that I walked away feeling.
I'd give it a weak recommend. I thought it was fine. And yeah, if I saw it, I'd be like, let's see what this director can do if he's given a real budget and a real cast, you know? Let's find out. And he apparently had his choice of projects after Mute Witness. It got a lot of praise. I'll agree with you. I think it's overrated. But he had a lot of buzz coming off of that. And he was the one who got the funding to make this movie. Now, American Werewolf in Paris is an independent production that was pretty much financed by Waller and his production company. It was distributed by Disney in the States, but Disney didn't make this film. It was made by Waller, who found out that American Werewolf was co-owned by John Landis and Polygram Pictures. And so he called Polygram and bought out Polygram's ownership. So now Anthony Waller is co-owner of the entire American Werewolf franchise with John Landis.
It's a real Elon Musk move. Just buy your way to ownership. Yeah.
Yep. Sounds as a delightful a pairing as when Michael Jackson bought all the Beatles back catalog.
And Waller pretty much rewrote the script almost entirely after WGA arbitration. Burns and Stern kept their name on it. But Waller, you know, this movie's kind of been a bastard child for a long time. I tried to find retrospective interviews where Julie Delpy or Tom Everett Scott talked about it. There's very little. Anthony Waller, he'd make a couple more films, but not a whole lot more. So I was shocked to find out this movie got a 4K three-disc release in Germany where Anthony Waller recorded a commentary.
Three discs?
Germany. Okay.
So I imported that three-disc edition. There was like making ofs and interviews from the time, and
it does have a master race subplot, so you know, I could see if it's going to play anywhere.
And it had work print cuts on it. Actually, it had one work print cut, and I found another work print cut in a dark corner of the internet. So I did my deep dive into this because I was excited to come back to this film. I remember my first time seeing it. It was January 1998. I may have told this story when we reviewed Titanic, but my sister got married in the state of Maine in January of 1998. And the last thing you want to do for any family member is go to Maine in January. It sucked.
It's cold, right?
It's very cold. It was negative 40 degrees at night.
Storm of the century.
I'm not even joking. Minus 40 degrees. I cannot remember if that's the wind chill or the temperature, but I remember that was being recorded.
Unpleasant either way.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it.
I have family who lives in Maine. I don't know that family very well. So I went for 3 days to Maine, and I spent all day in my hotel room watching the Rocky Marathon that was on TNT. And at night, I'd go to the movie theater that was a little ways away. I saw Titanic the first night, and the second night, I saw American Werewolf in Paris.
It's funny because this came out in 97, which has got to be around the time I saw the London one and fell in love with that one. I had never heard this one until we were doing the Before trilogy and talking about Julie Delpy, and it was mentioned that this movie existed, and I put it on a list, like, and I eventually got around to it in 2018 to watch this. I did watch it in October when it should not be watched at Christmas, so I at least watched it at the right time of the season. But yes, I watched it because of our Before trilogy, which put it on my radar.
Yeah, this is my one and only viewing of it. And again, I'm just curious to know why it's so hated. What and how much it's going to be tied to the London adventure.
Yeah, I was excited for this film. I'd seen the trailers. Tom Everett Scott, he had only done That Thing You Do at this point, plus some television work. I think that show Grace Under Fire. But I remember him being heralded as like the next Tom Hanks because he did the Tom Hanks role in That Thing You Do, directed by Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks picked him to be the next Tom Hanks.
Yes. So I thought he was going to be a major movie star, one to watch. I liked him in That Thing You Do, so I wanted to see that. And Julie Delpy, I had seen her in Before Sunrise and loved her in that.
Killing Zoe. She had done there was the Red, White, and Blue trilogy.
I didn't see Red, White, and Blue trilogy, but I'd seen Killing Zoe. I'd seen The Three Musketeers that was done with Charlie Sheen and Kiefer Sutherland. She was in that.
Oh dear. The pains of being French in the 90s. Okay. That's what she had to do.
But with the two stars of this film, I wanted to see this movie very badly. It helped that I was stranded in Maine in horrible weather. But even if I hadn't been, I would have made a point to see this movie.
Yeah, real Stephen King situation having to see this film.
Well, let's see if your enthusiasm holds. Arnie, give him the plot. We'll find out what the American does in Paris.
Tom Everett Scott is Andy, an American on a Euro trip with his friends Brad and Chris. Andy plans to bungee jump off the Eiffel Tower. On the night of the jump, he saves a woman named Seraphine, played by Julie Delpy, from committing suicide by jumping off the tower, but Andy is injured in the process. After his release from the hospital, Andy pursues Seraphine, who behaves mysteriously. She eventually introduces Andy to a man named Claude, who leads Andy, Chris, and Brad to a party. At the party, Andy learns Claude and his friends are werewolves who lure and eat tourists. Seraphine saves Andy, but Brad is killed, and Andy is bitten, becoming a werewolf. Haunted by Brad's ghost, Andy must kill the werewolf that killed Brad to free Brad's spirit. And if Andy kills the werewolf that bit him and eats that werewolf's heart, then Andy will be cured of his werewolfery. But Andy doesn't want to kill Seraphine, even to save himself from the curse. As Andy's werewolf instincts grow, he transforms and kills a cop and another woman, and that woman, Amy, played by Julie Bowen, is now a mutilated ghost and wants Andy to commit suicide to free her soul. Meanwhile, Claude attempts to recruit Andy into his werewolf gang by threatening Andy's friend Chris. Seraphine rescues Andy from Claude and reveals her father developed a serum that forces immediate werewolf transformation. Claude has stolen that serum. Andy and Seraphine infiltrate Claude's next tourist trap party, where Andy fights Claude. During the fight, Andy realizes it was Claude, not Seraphine, who bit him. So Andy uses the serum to wolf out and kill Claude, eating his heart and releasing Andy from the werewolf curse. Months later, Andy and Seraphine are getting married, celebrating with a bungee jump off the Statue of Liberty as credits roll.
As they start, are we at Notre Dame? I can't quite tell. There seems to be a big cathedral with lots of gargoyles. It's raining, very atmospheric. We're panning down, and we eventually see some dude climb out of a grate and go running for a taxi and not quite making it because a beastie pulls him back down under.
I just have a note about editing. Like, in a movie, when you cut between scenes, the viewer is going to make connections. So as, like, this man is being chased down and we keep cutting to this orchestra playing, I'm like, oh, like, there's someone in this orchestra that's going to be important? Nope, it's, I don't know why we cut to them. Maybe that was one of the other writer's scripts, but it's just to, I don't know, have some music playing during this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not Notre Dame. Most of this movie was actually filmed in Luxembourg because there were tax credits there. So very little is an American Werewolf in Paris. This is really an American Werewolf in Luxembourg. And yeah, we get this guy in a lab coat hopping out from a manhole cover. And I'm trying to figure out, is he a doctor? What is going on? What does this orchestra have to do with anything? I'm wondering if this is going to be like a Mission Impossible or The Crow type situation where there's going to be carnage at an opera. But yeah, I think that's just there to add some atmosphere and an early kill as this mysterious lab coat guy gets pulled under. And they bring back something from the first film. Instead of showing us the wolf, they do wolf POV. We had that in American Werewolf, but now they've like sepia toned it and made it glowy and things. It reminds me a lot of Wolfen, which used negative image to show wolf views more than it reminds me of what Landis did.
It's just random orange splotches. Like sometimes they'll go, oh no, this is the scent they're tracking or something. But no, it's just random orange splotches on the screen.
Yeah, I don't even think it's heat signature. It's just glowing. It's bad. It looks bad. This movie is telling me early on it only cost $25 million, 1997. It's a fairly low budget werewolf movie. It looks it. But then we're getting our Americans.
Yep, we get Tom Everett Scott. I mentioned he was one of the reasons I saw it. It was almost Tobey Maguire, and then it was almost Leonardo DiCaprio, but he decided to do Romeo plus Juliet instead of this one.
Wise, yeah.
He was offered $1 million to do this movie, which would be more money than he'd ever seen before, though. So he almost did this, but we end up with Tom Everett Scott, again, an up-and-coming star at the time.
And Stuart, you talked about sex comedy last time. This time I get it. And this feels like that late 90s. Had American Pie come out yet? It just, there's this general vibe about late 90s, early 2000s teen sex comedies I do not like. And this is tapping into all of that.
American Pie would come out in 99, but I'm right there with you, Jacob. Here's the thing. I loved those movies. I started looking up the one I keep going to, and it has Tom Everett Scott in it, and it's also not very well regarded, but I like it, is Dead Man on Campus, came out the year after this. There was also Can't Hardly Wait, came out the year after this. American Pie came out 2 years after this. I was consuming that kind of film theatrically. All those films I just listed saw in theaters because I liked that type of comedy. And that's what I remember is liking that here too.
So you love this.
Well, it's definitely dudes being dudes talking about scoring. They're both talking about something that's daredevil points, which takes a bit to figure out, but they are doing high risk stunts as they're traveling across Europe. And of course, they're trying to get laid. And we're to like Andy, the Tom Everett Scott character, because he's a romantic, or at least someone that can't get laid.
And this was so of the time. Remember Surge, the soft drink that was supposed to be even more extreme than Mountain Dew?
Yes.
It's like Coke's answer to Mountain Dew. And Doritos were supposed to be for people who lived on the edge and raced motorcycles and skated sideways.
It all got extreme in the late 90s, and I never liked that whole thing.
Yeah, but bungee jumping, all this extreme sports and things like that, the X Games, remember those? That was all around this time. So I really think that they were tapping into the zeitgeist of this period of the late 90s by having these be three extreme sport guys.
I feel it. Like, this feels very late 90s. Like, this soundtrack, when it starts playing up as they climb the Eiffel Tower, like, this is late 90s personified.
Yeah, you made me watch that Eurotrip. It was in the book or whatever. It's got that for sure, right? This is ugly Americans. They are, the way they're ordering wine and talking to the waiter, the way that they're talking about the blonde woman that they think is French. I think we are supposed to have a bit of disdain for the friends. They seem like dead meat, Brad and Chris.
I'm surprised they both aren't, honestly. The fact that Chris is going to be alive for this entire movie is perplexing.
It's weird, yeah.
Agreed.
And Chris, I don't know this guy, Phil Buckman. He's apparently bassist for Filter for many years and bassist for Fuel for many years. He has a big music career.
Oh, in the 90s.
Yeah, the big bands in the late 90s.
Yes, for about 3 years.
No, actually, he did all this in the 21st century.
Oh, he wasn't the original bassist then.
Oh, dear. Okay, so he's playing the state fairs.
Yes.
County fairs.
But I kind of like this trio and their games and their extreme sports, and we're not going to waste much time. They're going to get to their one parachuting location, the Eiffel Tower. They really did shoot on location at the Eiffel Tower here.
I could tell.
And going to do the bungee jump off the Eiffel Tower.
It doesn't look like a bungee cord. When they pull it out, it just looks like a rope.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it'll snap back. It seems like a bad idea for lots of reasons. And there's a weird moment here where the friends seem to be chickening out. They're drinking. They think that Andy is weird, that he's making calculations. He's actually doing mathematics or something, trying to figure this out.
I thought he was going to base jump. And yeah, you see him measuring the wind. I thought there was going to be a parachute in this backpack.
Oh, no. I figure he's testing the wind. What happens is what he didn't want to happen, which is when he rebounds back up, he hits the tower. I think he was trying to figure out which way do I jump so this doesn't happen. But then when he finally jumps, he doesn't go the way he planned.
Yeah, I don't think any of this is how bungee jumping works.
No. But it is kind of, it's very 90s rom-com that a woman that's about to kill herself should appear and he's going to save her after she goes over the edge by bungeeing afterward.
Yeah, Julie Delpy making her entrance here. She did talk about this movie a little bit and said after Before Sunrise was the one time in her life Hollywood was after her. She was getting all kinds of offers And she picked this one.
Wow. Mm.
Get a better agent.
And she said, after this movie, she never wanted to make another Hollywood film again. Apparently, the director was screaming on the set and was very verbally abusive. And she's like, if this is how American movies are made, I'm going to stick to indies.
And French films.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, if I'm having a good time, I could allow some stupidity. Like, you guys, the series you did before with Body Snatchers, you talked about The Faculty. And that's got some janky, like, CGI in it. But I love it. Like, I want to see those fingers move. I want to see those tentacles come out of the head. Like, I'm into the vibe of that film, so I'm willing to go with some not so great stuff, but like this, like, how are we catching up? We all learn in like second grade, when you drop things, they fall at the same rate. How are we catching up to Julie Delpy as she's jumping first? And then how are you holding this rope by hand with all this? None of this works. It's bad. It's awful. I hate it.
It looks cheap.
Yeah.
I'll agree it looks cheap. The green screening is obvious.
Oof.
And while they actually climbed the Eiffel Tower, even the platform where he's measuring the wind and things doesn't actually exist on the Eiffel Tower. So that's all green screen and it just looks bad. This whole movie, there's not going to be a time I say an effect looks good, okay? This movie looks like shit, beginning to end.
Thank you.
But I'll go with the bungee jump because this is quite clearly a wacky comedy. You know, this actor who's playing Brad, one of his next movies would be another one I saw in theaters, Rat Race, which is a very broad comedy, Whoopi Goldberg, and
yeah, it's got a huge cast, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Bean, and a lot of people in that.
All the comics you love.
And I will go with the lack of physics and the grabbing of the bungee cord and everything, because it's going to end with a Looney Tunes gonk on the head. He's going to save Seraphine's life by catching her and gently lowering her down. And then on the rebound, he's going to get conked on the head by one of the beams. If I'm laughing, then the physics don't matter. And I'm chuckling.
And I want to say, like, even though at this moment, 11 minutes and 50 seconds, I wrote not recommend, I am going to have compliments. There is going to be humor that works for me. I've got nice things to say about this film, but wrong opener for me. That's all I'm saying. I'm instantly turned off because, I don't know, is this Eiffel Tower the same length as that runway in Fast Five? Like, they fall forever. It is very tall.
Yeah, it's not that tall, but yeah. I mean, I get all the complaints, Jacob, but Arnie's right. If you're looking at this, you're missing the point.
I'm missing it then.
The point is that you need to be a teenage boy in the 1990s and appreciate that this is like the, you know, hipster way of showing cool guys, right? You would think that these guys are cool if you're a young man watching them bungee off and save a girl from suicide.
I mean, this is the meet cute. Of the three of us, especially in the late 90s, I couldn't consume enough rom-coms, and this was a rom-com. The first film is a comedy horror, and while there is a romance in it, that movie is not a rom-com. This movie is a complete rom-com with the meet-cute, the misunderstandings, the problems they're going to have to get through to work on their relationship, down to the happy ending together. And so I've seen much worse rom-coms than what we're watching here.
Look, if Landis was behind the camera, this would probably be playing different. Anthony Waller, I don't know who he is. He's not able to handle these tone juggling issues here.
I do agree that these leads don't have much chemistry together. I can like Julie Delpy all day, but she's not with Ethan Hawke. She's with this milquetoast guy who, yeah, he's put into the hospital. He sees her again. We think it might just be from his head injury, but in fact, she is stealing hearts from the surgery rooms because she needs to make, you know, blood smoothies. This is a stretch.
Yeah, they're definitely not following the rules of werewolves from that first American Werewolf film because we never saw David eating hearts or anything like that in that first film. He seemed to be fairly normal until he eventually wolfed out. And so here now we're being told Seraphine has to steal hearts from a hospital, which I can't imagine there's that many hearts going around the hospital unless you're in the morgue and taking them out of dead bodies yourself. And you get a surgeon walking out and he's like, she stole my heart. Ha ha, double meaning, you know.
Very lax security in that hospital.
Talk about falling for a girl. Yeah, these one-liners are the problem. That's what I would argue, is that I'm with you that this is a different spirit and more contemporary. Like, if you're going to make a movie in 1997, it better be like this and not like the movie from 1981, but just not funny. I think it seems desperate, and these two, I don't want them together. Help me out with this part. They need to find the suicide note so that they know where she lives?
Yep, those are the words that are said.
Don't you always put your address in your suicide notes? Stuart, come on.
Right, yeah, I don't know. Or maybe they look her up in the phone book through her name because she'd put her full name on it. I don't understand, but they do have some comedy, air quotes.
Do not say comedy. Ugh, this stuff is awful.
You know, they're digging through trash cans and looking over people's shoulders as they're reading to try and find a suicide note that might have blown off of the Eiffel Tower as she fell.
And I loved this park scene in theaters because it's done to Smash Mouth's Walking on the Sun. That song had just hit charts. That thing came out in July of 97. I'm watching this in January of 98. I'm like, how did they get the rights to use that song so quickly? I love that song.
If you only knew.
And I loved the soundtrack to this. I listened to the soundtrack to this a lot. Now, Smash Mouth, they didn't get in time to get on the soundtrack. But on the soundtrack, we get Bush, Better Than Ezra, Cake, Fastball. A lot of great songs from great bands on here.
Okay.
Again, this is all subjective and relative because this is something I strongly dislike. I mean, there's a Skinny Puppy song a little bit in this, but the rest of the soundtrack, no thank you. I am not listening to any of this.
Oh, come on. Cake's Never Gonna Give You Up cover from Barry White is amazing.
Nah, they had better songs.
They did what they did. They said it in a sarcastic way.
Yeah.
Sounds like every other Cake song. Again, if you love the late 90s, yes, all of this is hitting your sweet spot. I do imagine there is an audience for this. I guess what I would assert is, I heard this movie was total garbage, and it is, but I think it is, if you are the right age, the kind of garbage that would please you.
And I was definitely that age when I saw this in theaters. I'm having fun with this. And then when they go to Seraphine's house after, I'm liking Tom Everett Scott as the awkward guy trying to ask the beautiful girl out on a date. The rom-com stuff and the broad sex comedy stuff is working for me. When they go on the date and his friends try to load him up with condoms and...
Okay, you gonna defend this condom blowing up scene? Like, I am just so mad at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to recover from a bunch of condoms falling out of my pocket by claiming they're chewing gum, putting them in my mouth, and blowing a bubble. That seems desperate.
I'm not finding it as funny now as I did when this movie came out and I was like 23, but I still can go with it in a nostalgic 90s raunch comedy kind of way. And what I realized, especially when watching this the third time for this review, is that the Andy and Seraphine really remind me of Ross and Rachel from Friends. And that was the romance of the 90s for media consumers. And I think that by tapping into that kind of geek guy, hot girl romance, that it was reminding me of better versions of this and thus making this go down easier.
Again, if you're the right age, this will be nostalgia. You will appreciate how it's hitting pop culture. Yeah, these Smash Mouth songs and whatever else you're doing backflips over, Arnie, will, I guess, please people that time meant something to them. I just didn't like the late 90s. Like, in terms of pop culture, the fashion, the music, and all of that, I was checked out. I was listening to a lot of jazz, if you want to know.
And the problem isn't just, like, bad comedy. Again, I'm going to throw it on this director. We're going to get this confrontation because that wacky condom, when it deflated, landed in a dude's soup, and he's super mad now and is going to beat up Andy, but Seraphine's going to step in and... Like, this should be able to show you her strength as she pushes him into some shelves, and it doesn't look good. I'm not convinced that Julie Delpy has the strength by how it's filmed here.
No, and again, these aren't the same rules as American Werewolf in London. We never saw David have super strength when he wasn't a werewolf, but here we're playing by totally different rules. She is super strong, And now she's going to run off because she let her super strength get in the way and leave Andy to pine for her some more.
Now, there's another thing that happened. He got punched in the face and he's bleeding through the nose. And she's not turned on by him, but she definitely would eat him. She would definitely eat his heart. They should have played with that more. I don't feel like this couple has much cute about it. You keep calling these scenes, you know, meet cutes, but to me, they seem forced. But if it had a little bit more danger, if I actually believed that she'd kill him, you know, that would be, I think, something to play with. But this is the one and only time.
Yeah, they're never going to go that dark with this. You know, the darkness of American Werewolf in London is gone here, which is why seeing this first, I was so shocked by the bleakness of American Werewolf in London. Because, I mean, this movie's going to end with him getting cured. American Werewolf in London ended with David getting shot and then credits rolled. So, yeah. Very different, intense here.
Yeah, getting the girl, all of it is such a fantasy. And I do wonder if that darkness, I know it's a part of what people like about that 1981 movie, but you wonder if it might have made more money if they had, you know, I think it has a ceiling, right? There's a cap to how many people appreciate black comedy as opposed to actual comedy.
Sure, but if you're going into something scary, I don't know, that audience is going to be more forgiving for black comedy than this really broad stuff that's going on here.
Yeah, that's a question to ask. Is anything about this scary? We're going to meet this guy, Claude, who's obviously a werewolf and is obviously leading these men into Club de la Luna, where they're obviously going to be, you know, attacked by werewolves. Is anything about this ever scary?
No, there is no horror in this movie. I think a couple of times they're going for horror. I rewatched the trailer for this movie. They definitely sell it as horror comedy. But when you actually watch this film, I think the opening scene has a tinge of horror to it, seeing the guy yanked under the grates from an unknown thing. That is the most horrific scene of the entire movie. Anytime they're going to try for horror from here on out, they're going to fail miserably because they don't have the tech to do what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they got some poorly rendered computer graphics they got to rely on.
Yeah, first of all, it's the late 90s. Nobody had great computer graphics.
I agreed.
But even for the time, what we're given on a $25 million budget is substandard.
This is unacceptable.
On the bonus features, the company that did this, Santa Barbara Studios, I looked them up.
Oh, they were out of business after this film, right?
They did go out of business a few years later, yes. They'd been around for a while doing some effects for Star Trek TV series and movies. And the guy was there treating themselves like they're ILM. They're like, well, we've seen realistic dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, and now we're going to see realistic werewolves.
Come on.
And we had to design all new programs to handle hair.
Yeah, I want to hear all about their fur technology here.
He thought they were going to be the Jurassic Park werewolf movies with this, and they aren't.
Nah. He didn't think that. He might have hyped it like it was that. If you're making a sequel to American Werewolf in London, you know the pressure is on for the transformation. You know that everyone can't wait to see how you're going to top that. And when we get this moment, Julie Delpy has been in a cage and shenanigans, she gets out of the cage to go warn Andy to leave this club. And she starts howling and her elongating. I mean, we know, right? This transformation is terrible.
And it's not even the full transformation. This is a hint at the transformation to come.
You get a titty shot.
Yeah, we get her, like, abs changing, and it looks bad.
I think she's got a bunch of titties, right? Like a she-wolf. She's got multiple nipples.
No, yeah. You see her breasts.
Yeah.
Yeah, several times in this movie.
Listen, for this movie, this transformation is okay. It's the best you're going to get in this movie, I think. There's one other shot that's decent, and I'll call the transformation of Julie's character decent, but most of this movie is unacceptable. And here, after Seraphine changes, we get the werewolf attacks, Claude and his friends have all changed, and this doesn't look bad because they are actually using practical werewolves. You can tell that they're people in costumes attacking things.
Really?
Yeah, and it's strobe light effects.
I couldn't tell that.
I didn't know that.
It looks okay. It's very quick cut. It's just not exciting is the problem. I don't feel like it's filmed in such a way that it sells me on either horror or excitement.
When did Blade come out?
What there should be is the party scene from Blade, which came out almost a year later.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of. I'm like, well, I didn't recommend that movie, but I'm like, there is a good scene, and this is, yeah, this feels like it's of the same piece, but does not work at all.
Yeah, it looks shitty. It's not scary. It is setting up something about a new subplot, which was not in American Werewolf in London, and I do think American Werewolf in London needed more story. What we noticed was that all the people in this club were homeless. And they were just sleeping on the stairs, peeing on the walls. That will be an important feature when we find out more about these werewolves, that they specifically are targeting undesirable people.
And Americans.
Well, I mean, you know, that one might say that's what Americans are.
I just find that there's too much going on. Like, we have, sure, Andy is our protagonist, but we have three Americans. And you said Chris goes off and does some hijinks to find Seraphine. And then Andy is going to run off during the scene. Brad, I guess, stays around. He's going to die here.
Yeah. He loses his life to Claude, I guess?
No, it's not Claude, because it is one of the henchmen, because later on that hench werewolf is going to die while Claude is still alive.
It's just a random one.
So yeah, just one of the nameless henchmen of Claude is going to kill Brad.
Yeah, because when Andy kills that werewolf at the end, I'm like, okay, that was Claude, and then it changes back to someone else that we never know.
Yeah, every scene later in this movie, I'm like, oh, they got Claude. No, that's not Claude. I just assume every werewolf I see is Claude, because I don't know any of the other people. I just kept writing Claude.
But during this, Seraphine was trying to get Andy out of there, but Andy's getting chased by a wolf. We're supposed to think it's Seraphine. He gets behind a gate, but the wolf bites him through the gate.
And that wolf is Claude.
Yes, but yes. We're not supposed to know that. We're supposed to think it's Seraphine.
Right. And he wakes up in Seraphine's bed, and this is where the heart smoothies come back, and she's dream sequences. This is where they try to tether to some Landis comedy, that he has a fantasy that she's going to get naked and get on top of him and turn into a werewolf.
And you mentioned a titty shot. Julie Delpy, she'll take off her shirt for your film. She did it for the Before movie. She'll do it for this. She's French. She doesn't care.
I mean, there's a difference in quality between those two things.
Yeah. Killing Zoe. I mean, yeah, I think every movie she was topless that I can think of.
I remember being very excited by that. Even though I'd seen him before, I liked Julie Delpy a lot when I was in my early 20s. So I was happy for that scene. And yeah, she's right there telling Andy, you're now a wolf and I'm a wolf and you have to eat blood now. And she's talking to her dead mother, who is a ghost zombie in that room.
Yeah. We don't know yet, but her father was the guy from the beginning who Chris saw down in the cage.
Her stepfather.
Yes, this was cut from the theatrical release. But when I watched the work print and then listened to the commentary, that mother was supposed to be Jenny Agutter. They actually offered her that role. Seraphine is supposed to be the daughter of Alex and David from the first movie, and that dead nurse mother was supposed to be Alex.
It's a tie. I don't know. Here's what I would honestly say. Keep going in this direction. Not that I want it, but I think that you need to. I would not want to see a movie where they're doing the exact same thing as they did in 1981, but with the Eiffel Tower in the background. That would be what I assume they were going to do, and instead they have made something that is very 1997 and has all of the aesthetics of that teen comedy era. That seems wise to do that. Just do your own movie and don't try to tie it too much more than the title would tie it to Landis's work. It's not Landis.
Are you saying you wouldn't want this ghost victim stuff in it?
I'm saying I don't think it's working. This bit with the mother feels really forced, and they kind of forget about it.
Yeah, there was a big scene where Claude discussed the history of werewolves, and said that werewolves were plentiful, and then they got hunted by man until only one werewolf remained, and he was living on the moors in England. And then that werewolf was shot, but he had bitten an American who impregnated a woman who gave birth to Seraphine. So we're supposed to think Seraphine turned all of these other people into werewolves. Seraphine has created all these werewolves in the script and the work print cut. And that was all cut out of the final theatrical release.
She gets around.
Yeah. The weird thing is that I thought Andy was totally in love with Seraphine. And again, he's having this fantasy of having sex with her. But all of a sudden, once he learns that he's a werewolf, he's suddenly going to be with Julie Bowen of Modern Family. Everyone's least favorite character on Modern Family is here.
I knew Julie Bowen when this movie came out because I really liked Happy Gilmore a lot. That was one of her very first films, came out the year before this. And I think he's still into Seraphine, but he's wolfy now. He's into raw meat and sex and just base animal instincts.
Yeah, he's literally a dog. He's gonna sniff her ass. Did you laugh? Was that funny? Like, it just seemed kind of gross to me.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the, like, oh, I'm not being prudish, but it just, like, yeah, it just seems obvious.
I don't want my nose there. Bad stuff comes out of that place.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Zenny will stick their tongue there. So, I mean, we have different ideas.
Yeah, not into it. Sorry.
It's not about being into it or not into it. I just don't think it's funny. I guess this is where I would land on this. This is not my idea of comedy.
Not funny or sexy.
Yeah. And all of this feels more to the point. It feels like it's stuck in here because they want to do the Landis zombie thing. They know they need a Griffin Dunn and they didn't set it up. You would think it would be one of the bros. I guess Brad is sometimes that, but he doesn't seem to be the one that they love to focus on.
Yeah, Brad shows up on this date and is a ghost who's telling Andy, you're a werewolf, but I need you to release my soul. This is also new. Now, I never really thought, why could David see Jack? What was the relationship that allowed Jack to appear to him? I guess werewolves can just see ghosts. Initially, I thought it was the ghosts of the people you killed, but David didn't kill Jack, and here, Andy didn't kill Brad, but Brad is showing up and saying, I need you to basically avenge me to set my soul free, and you need to watch out because you're going to become a wolf. Andy doesn't listen to Brad. He and this Amy go to fuck on Jim Morrison's grave, and then Andy turns into a wolf, and yeah, this is where the wolf effects get really shoddy.
When you have to jump into water to transform because you cannot put it on film, like, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. It goes into the fountain. Yeah, you could tell. I think there is a little bit of prosthetics there, but it's mostly CGI work that they're doing, and I don't know. Would they be better off putting makeup on him? Like, would we accept it more if they had gone practical?
Yeah, I definitely think that it would have been better if they'd gone practical. At least they would have had something to fall back on. What happened is they filmed and they said, you know, they're doing the Jurassic Park thing. In the close-up shots, when we're seeing, like, partial werewolf, we are going practical. But whenever you see the full wolf, we're going full CGI. They committed to that, so they didn't have any other choice. They had to do what the CGI could do. Now, the CGI people were very proud of the wolf jumping out of the fountain shot. It probably is one of the better werewolf shots here. It doesn't look so bad. I mean, it's going to get to a point, though, right after this, that I couldn't believe it. I thought the effects weren't finished.
They're not!
I thought I was looking at an animatic. I really thought, at one point in the commentary, the director doesn't really address any of the shortcomings of this film. Waller just ignores all that.
So he says nothing during the whole commentary.
At one point, he does let a line slip of, maybe we'd run out of money by this point. And so I do think that maybe some of these effects never got finished. That, like, they were going to do more iterations and more improvements of the special effects, and they literally ran out of money, and you get what you get.
Are you talking about Amy coming back and, like, blood squirting out of her when she tries to whistle and her eye popping out? Is that what we're talking about?
I'm talking about the wolf coming after he's out of the fountain, just how the wolf himself looks. The wolf looks like a PlayStation 2 graphic.
No, it's awful. I do like it once Amy dies. I feel like this should have leaned, I don't know, if you're going to go with this 90s, late 90s teen sex comedy romance thing, just have more goofy humor like this with Amy blowing her eye out. And I don't know, you're trying to get laid and you have all these dead zombies yelling at you trying to direct your love life. There's something there. It's more than what they're giving us in this thing.
I mean, that's making it more like London. I would argue this is the stuff that's not working. You just cut everything with Amy.
I enjoy the zombie Amy stuff. I think Julie Bowen does a pretty good job here as far as being funny and being sexy. And she does exactly what's needed. She doesn't add anything to the role, but she does achieve the goals there. And I kind of like now the interplay between Amy and Brad, because Amy, her soul can only be freed if Andy dies. And so she wants Andy to die, whereas Brad wants Andy to avenge him. It leads to some kind of comedy.
Yeah, she tries to lure him in front of buses and all of that. It has feels like a very different movie than London. I mean, it is. It's a very different comedy than London was. And I guess that's good. I guess you want it to have a different flavor. I just don't think they're very successful at it. Or maybe I just don't like this. And Arnie, you are a fan of the genre. You feel like it's doing well enough?
No, I'm really souring as it goes on. I'm trying to keep in the mood of it, but I'm really thinking, much like the first film, this movie's losing its plot here. We're following Andy as he's transforming and he's talking to the ghosts. But first of all, where the fuck is Chris? Don't you think Chris would be checking on his friend and being like, hey, Brad's dead. We maybe should go to the embassy. And Andy is getting followed by cops. In addition to killing Amy, he kills a French police officer that night for reasons. That police officer never comes back as a ghost, but Amy does. I don't know why that is. And this movie becomes so messy as I'm trying to figure it all out, and I'm trying to figure out what Claude wants.
Well, you mentioned multiple screenwriters.
Yeah, and that's my issue, is it's too much plot. Like, it doesn't need to be this complicated. There's no thread I'm enjoying, so why are there so many threads?
Well, I think that the original needed more threads. I think that this is a good instinct.
Did it need this many?
I just don't think it's done well. I mean, I think you have to make a distinction between, yeah, did it need this many threads? Maybe, but I don't think when you're telling a story this badly that it's helpful to have more plot. You want to make it simple when it's not going well. And these are not going well. Yeah, that there are French police officers following our main character, but accidentally knocking over, you know, noisy toys or something at a kiosk.
What was that?
It's not funny. That the main inspector, the boss, is basically, she's not having this werewolf theory. She just thinks everyone is on drugs. And so it's a joke later that the werewolves are going to turn to syringes to try and hold on to their werewolf power. This is the storyline that kicks in that I think is probably a good idea. It probably is wise to have it become werewolves are trying to prune humanity to its best selves, have it get back to the Nazism and do something like they're doing here. Just do it better, as I guess what I would say.
And I am a lot more critical of this one than London, because I don't know, we have so many stereotypes about the French and Parisians, like, and especially by 97, like, there's just so much material to do some kind of commentary on what us dumb American tourists are doing to your country. And I don't know, we're going to have a 4th of July party. I don't get what the commentary is.
It's not just Americans. I mean, I think they're trying to kill anyone that's undesirable. They're trying to have the best people become werewolves.
The last party is Americans only on the 4th of July.
Yeah, they did that, I realize, but the earlier party was all homeless people.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. And the scene where Claude brings Andy back to the house, he tries to explain what they're doing. There's some hints at like ethnic cleansing or something, but it's all very hand-wavy. This is where it would have come out that what he's really trying to do is rebuild the werewolf population back to what it used to be. And that his goal was really involved using the serum and things, that Seraphine's stepfather was trying to create a cure. She was born a werewolf. She's the only born werewolf. And so the father, whoever Nurse Alex ended up marrying, was a scientist to try to cure this girl's werewolfery. And it was also said in the work print that Alex, being a nurse, was able to steal hearts for her daughter and things. And it was shortly, right before the movie started, that Seraphine killed her mother, and the person we saw running was her stepfather, and she didn't kill him, but she bit his legs off.
Mm. Maybe you do need that connection to the first movie then, because I do think that this is probably their best idea. They should have had more of it. The focus should have been on this. Skip Julie Bowen, skip some of the other stuff, and just make it about, yes, Nazi werewolves that are ethnic cleansing and trying to rebuild their ranks. And if, yes, Julie Delpy is the only werewolf left over from the lineage of that American werewolf in London, then, yeah, I guess they should have kept that. Why didn't they keep it?
Instead, it's really just confusing again that Claude wants Andy to kill Chris. Chris is tied up there. And Seraphine then grabs Andy, takes her to the basement where her werewolf dad is dead, and the serum is stolen, and she tries to give the exposition, but it's just not very clear. It took a couple watchings and some extended cuts for me to fully grasp what the hell's going on. But I guess the full moon is over?
Yeah, this is what I find funny is Seraphine's like, I've been studying my stepdad's notes and I just can't figure this out. I've been going over everything. And Andy's just like, I'm going to mansplain this to you. Let me look at this chalkboard with like some notes written on it for 30 seconds. Oh yeah, they're turning themselves into werewolves when it's not the full moon.
Well, no, Seraphine knows that.
Then why did we have to have it all explained to us by Andy?
No, I think Andy was trying to fix the... It's even funnier. He was actually going to step in there and try and fix this scientist's formula so that it would work, which it never does.
But all the serums are gone, so he can. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. And why do they want to kill Chris? You would think that Chris, he's in better physical shape, better specimen. Why would anyone want Tom Everett Scott? Arnie, you keep complimenting this guy.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks, he is not. He's really bad in this movie. I'm having real problems because he is the comedic foil.
Well, keep in mind, Claude doesn't want him. Claude wanted to eat him like he eats other humans. He meant to kill Andy in that beginning. Andy just happened to get behind that gate and escape. So Andy being a werewolf was a mistake. That was not Claude's intent ever.
I thought it was a mistake to invite them.
No, the mistake was that they're still alive at all.
Okay. So many mistakes here.
And now Claude is like, we didn't mean to make you a werewolf, but since you are a werewolf, you're either with us or we're going to kill you anyway. And to prove you're with us, kill your friend. But Tom Everett Scott's out of his depth here. I think he works perfectly fine as a clumsy romantic interest. I don't think he works as a hero. I don't think he works as a threat.
Or a werewolf.
I don't think he works as tortured. I loved last week's movie because I felt David's pain.
Yeah, agreed.
Here, all I'm feeling is goofiness coming off this guy.
And some of that is tone, that they haven't gone for the tragedy. But yeah, some of it is wrong actor. And he doesn't have any wolfishness to him. And it's painful. Again, that scene where he's crawling up to the woman and sticking his head in under her skirt. Somebody could have pulled that off.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
That would have been funny.
But we're getting to the climax here. Like you said, there's the 4th of July party, and Claude and his men have all stolen the serum so that they can turn themselves and kill all of these Americans.
But why did they leave the flyer so that these people would know where they're going to be at?
I don't know. They did, but I don't know why.
Yeah. Come and stop us. I mean, they could have gotten away with this if they hadn't taunted these two werewolves.
Yeah. Did they even know what would happen? Because they stole the serum and left the flyer when they stole the serum. But after they stole the serum is when they tried to recruit Andy. So it's just all a cluster. It's not even worth trying to dissect. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just getting from point A to point B. And finally, we're at this climax. that looks like a fucking PlayStation game of werewolves attacking people.
Come on, at least a PS2. I take that back. It's pretty PS1.
You got all these Americans who, again, it would have been helpful. See, this is where you could have used Julie Bowen or something. I feel like, yeah, establish some Americans in peril. I guess we're supposed to just care because they're Americans and we just love our people that way. Yeah, they're at this church and the bouncer has put a steam shovel against the door and everyone is now injecting because it's only a quarter moon. It's a crescent moon. So they have to use chemical means to become wolfish. And they're saved because, well, Seraphine knocks a gargoyle over on the bouncer and opens the doors with the steam shovel. And what, the cops help him out?
Yeah, the cops show up and...
The cops want to arrest him.
Yeah, they think it's drugs. Again, the syringes.
Yeah, it's just so messy here. The cops come in, but then... Claude and the company still inject themselves and we get the werewolf fight and it's human Seraphine and human Andy because it's not the full moon against the werewolves. And they kill one werewolf and we get a brief moment of Brad like, I'm free! And his spirit goes off to the ever after.
Yeah, looks like he gets dusted.
Yeah. And Chris gets away. He was crucified, shirtless, and then breaks off and goes running away. I guess it's some kind of comedy.
That was a good joke. I laughed.
The French cops are making the sign of the cross before they're eaten. And I guess they're trying to go with the idea that you can't tell the difference between the werewolves. They're trying to use that in their advantage here at the end, that Seraphine eventually gets a hypo, injects herself, and she's fighting Claude, and... Andy just doesn't know that it's her. He just shoots them both. He just unloads his gun, not realizing that he's mortally wounded Seraphine.
Correct. Because I guess we're supposed to be in suspense if he's going to actually kill her and eat her heart out to reverse the curse.
Honestly, I'll be honest with you guys. I never thought that she was the one that ate him. I guess I should have, but it's been so badly staged and directed that it was never clear to me. I couldn't keep track of these werewolves. There's too many dudes. Again, I just kept going Claude, every time I saw a werewolf.
They only have one CGI render for a werewolf, so they all look the same.
Mm-hmm. They do. And again, it works in this scene because he can't tell who is the good one and the bad one, I guess. But I don't think he knew that she was either of them. I don't know. It's a moment. And it passes.
Yeah, but she's begging him to kill her, and he's about to, and that's when the cops show up. He was going to stab her, and the cops show up at the last second, and he couldn't bring himself to do it anyway, so he runs down the hallway, and the police take Seraphine to an ambulance.
Right, and we gotta have a Claude showdown. So, yes, Claude is chasing him. He tries to lure him in front of a subway car, and it works. But it just means that the subway car stops, and now you have a fight on a train, crowded.
And if you want to know who to blame for this whole mess, Anthony Waller is here in a cameo as the subway car driver, so he's the person who's at fault for all of this.
Yeah, he's been driving this whole wreck of a film the whole time, but this is, like, cut this and use this budget to add more fur to the renders of the CGI. Like, I don't need this drawn out. I guess they're trying to hit that 90-minute mark. This is not a long film. Like, I guess they need to stretch it out.
I also noticed they had a mute witness poster that the werewolf tears through as it's coming down the car towards, I don't know what it's trying to do, escape, trying to kill Andy. It has a hypo.
I don't even know how it survived getting hit by a subway car, given that in the last movie, regular bullets could kill a werewolf. In this one, at one point, Seraphine's talking about Andy's new metabolism and new healing factor and super strength and survived getting hit by subway cars. These seem like pretty super powered werewolves.
But they need to keep getting the injections. He turns human, and this is where Andy notices the scar on his neck. The werewolf that bit him was one that got impaled briefly by a metal rod. And so now he knows that this is the werewolf he needs to kill. And he's more than happy to inject that syringe and eat his heart out.
So bad looking. So bad looking. Again, I just keep thinking about when I watch movies with animatics and where they show the director, this is basically what's going to happen. The general shape of the thing will eventually detail. And it is just not done here. Watching the wolf eat the heart, my heart sinks. I just can't believe somebody thought this was at all acceptable.
Did they not think in any of these cuts, Arnie, about a tragic ending? Seraphine having so many bullets in her that she should die, and rather than have this joke where she's on the ambulance talking about how much she loves Andy and a bucktooth EMT is thinking he could take advantage of her?
They never thought about a tragic ending. However, there is a different ending. When this film was made,
they didn't double down on the bungee jumping?
This film has an original ending, and I'll tell you what it is Seraphine is in the back of the ambulance, and her stepfather is standing over her, looking all human and kind of crazy-haired, holding notes. This is a ghost holding notes of paper saying, "I figured out the formula. I have a permanent cure." And Seraphine says, "I love you, father." And the bucktooth EMT says that, "Oh, I'm easy, but that's not my name." Then we jump several months later, and Seraphine is giving birth to a baby. And it's Andy and Seraphine's infant. They've been cured. The ghost formula cured them.
Oof.
And then as the baby is born, we zoom in on the baby. The baby opens its eyes and it has yellow wolf eyes, and credits roll.
Yeah, okay.
But what happened was test screenings, believe it or not, test screenings went so well, especially with the bungee jumping.
Do not believe it.
No.
That Disney came to Waller and said, "We want more bungee jumping. We will write a check."
I'm wildly out of touch with what the American public wants at this point. I don't understand anyone.
Well, admittedly, Waller did say that the CG wasn't done during the test screening. So like a screen came up that said wolf eats heart. So the test audience didn't know how shitty everything was going to look.
Fair. Yeah. They do tell you that in test screenings, like, don't judge the special effects. They're not done yet.
Uh-huh. So Disney wrote Waller a check to redo the ending to bring back the bungee jumping. So instead of the baby, we got this tacked on ending of bungee jumping at the Statue of Liberty. Now here's where it gets funny, is before ever making this film, Waller had sold the distribution rights to get the money to make it, right? That's how these films work. Well, Disney said, "We paid for the new ending, so that new ending is only coming to Disney. Across the rest of the world, you don't get that ending.
You had to come to America to get this cool ending?"
So other companies pitched in more money so that the whole world could have the bungee jumping off the Statue of Liberty ending.
America's the villains. I will never believe that now.
Wow. This is strange.
But then it gets even crazier.
I want a movie of just the coming up of this ending. This is a crazy story.
The home video companies did not pitch in to pay Disney. So if you saw this movie on DVD anywhere except the United States, you saw the wolf baby ending. But if you saw this movie on DVD in the United States, you saw the bungee jumping Disney ending.
And are you satisfied with any of these endings? I mean,
so much work for such a horrible ending.
The wolf baby ending is so much better. A, it leaves hooks in for a sequel. B, if you'd left in the part that Seraphine was a wolf baby herself, it shows that it passes. And so that now we have David's grandchild, the werewolf. It just works better overall. Plus, it doesn't have this terrible CGI again or green screening of the bungee jump. But yeah, they actually called Julie Delpy and Tom Everett Scott. And for some reason, Chris, Phil Buckman, they got him back to be the best man at this Statue of Liberty wedding. And in the theatrical cut, I ask you, isn't Seraphine still a fucking werewolf?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they both were still.
Tom Everett Scott cured himself by eating the heart, but Seraphine's still a werewolf.
I don't know. I just assumed that I did with everyone, but I thought Claude bit her.
Yeah, unless Claude changed her, then maybe she's cured too?
Yeah.
The cool ending is that they're both werewolves.
But then she would have had to eat the heart.
If he eats the heart, doesn't that count for her too?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
This is an ending only possible in a pre-9/11 world. That was my immediate, like, no one's sneaking up on the Statue of Liberty post-9/11.
So, Jacob, Stewart, how strongly do you not recommend An American Werewolf in Paris? Jacob.
This movie's awful. Like, at 11 minutes, 50 seconds, not recommend because of that bungee thing. And then they double down on that, and I was furious. Like, I could not believe. And then to hear that there is such a tale of how they came up with this ending. It's actually amazing that so much effort went into making this pile of dog poo. Because, yeah, we talked about the look is awful. If you aren't down with, like, late 90s alternative rock, don't listen to this soundtrack. I will never listen to it again. And just that aesthetic, that attitude, it's something I didn't like then. I, watching this movie for the first time as someone over the age of 40, didn't like it in 2018, don't like it now. The crazy thing is, like, Tom Everett Scott, I don't really know who this guy is. He's not good. And Julie Delpy, I've seen movies with her. She's a real actor that could actually act, and she's not good in this, which tells me, like, Anthony Waller, I'm not going to go see Mute Witness. You don't have to tell me how bad it is, Stuart. I trust me, I don't want to see anything by this director. Yeah, it's going to be a letdown if you liked what they did in London with the practical stuff. I think they got the humor down better. Some of the humor here works. I gave it some compliments, but yeah, just, I don't know, chew on a condom and blow a bubble with it. That's probably more satisfying than this film. Not recommend. Strong not recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, mine is not a strong not recommend, but here's where I'm at. American Werewolf in London, it felt like a horror movie that turned lycanthropy into a metaphor of male sexual desire, and this is just a teen sex farce, where the only time I laughed was when they showed the CGI werewolves. I don't like this genre. I'm with Jacob. I just don't want this. When they work, when there are good ones, and there are a few examples of Superbad or something like that where I feel like, okay, this transcends the genre, it's because they had heart. And this movie, despite the numerous organs being ripped out of people's chest,
lots of hearts.
There is no chemistry between these leads. There is no heartfelt emotion. I'm not rooting for anyone or anything. I think they would have been wiser. Now that you've explained things, Arnie, I actually do like the idea of them tying more directly and just making it about lineage. You know, having these euthanizing master race werewolves trying to, you know, perfect a perfect bloodline and having it all being about her being the one. That probably would have helped unify and given some order. But you needed a better director. You needed, I don't know, to make this, make it better. That's my directive. I feel like the ideas that are here are not the problem. It's the execution. And by the end of it, it's just a solid not recommend.
When I watch a movie for Now Playing, I try to approach it with an open mind, regardless of its reputation. If it's a movie I haven't seen, I give it a fair chance, even if the trailers or cast don't inspire much confidence. I go in to Spartacus and In the Name of the King 3 with the same mindset.
That's what's special about you, Arnie, is that you could do that.
Yeah, that's called delusion.
I was trying to be nice, Stuart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, In the Name of the King 3 could be good, sure.
If it's a rewatch, I try to put my previous impressions aside and see the movie with fresh eyes. It's what happened with Goonies, and I saw a movie I didn't like after loving that movie for decades. With An American Werewolf in Paris, though, I had fond memories of it as dumb fun with a great soundtrack and two likable leads. And knowing how hated it is, I was ready to defend it, thinking it was just overhated for being a lesser sequel to a classic. I was so set on recommending this, I even imported a German edition so I could celebrate the movie with its bonus features.
You needed all three discs. There's so much information you needed to consume.
Then I watched it. And I watched it again with two separate work prints. And what I saw was a mess.
Two separate work prints?
Yeah, two separate work prints.
That is too much effort for this film. That is more effort than the CGI artist put in.
Yeah, one was a really bad VHS copy, quite obviously, that was barely visible, which actually improved the CGI. The other was a pristine transfer with completely generic music. The VHS one had like The Doors and things in it. It didn't have this soundtrack. It had like classic rock. Instead of Smash Mouth, it was Hello, I Love You as they were going through the park.
Mm-hmm. Trying to keep it more in that London vibe.
Yeah. So I watched this film and what I saw was a mess. And the unfinished, unforgivable special effects were hard to overlook. But I was still determined to give this a pass as dumb fun. I mean, I enjoyed some of the silly early scenes with Andy and Seraphine the same way I enjoyed the late 90s comedies like Road Trip and Dead Man on Campus. But the problems only multiplied after Andy gets bitten. The plot is chaotic, with no explanation for Chris's random appearances or the pointless Andy cops subplot. Claude's motivations are muddled, and the movie's attempted horror falls flat. It's aiming for action comedy, like Blade, but it fails due to terrible, unfinished graphics that make the action look like cheap animatics. And if you recall, Blade was going to do a big CGI ending and realized, shit, we can't make that work, and change the ending. Here, they just went with the shit CGI and did not change course.
I mean, that was the Blood God, right? Like, they still had a bad CGI ending in Blade.
Yeah, I was about to say, my memory is still looked like crap.
At least it was quick and not the whole film.
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be a giant CGI Blood God, and instead you just got Steven Dorff doing swordplay. There were no CGI Steven Dorff. His arm got cut off and it came back. That was bad CGI, but then the ending of this, again, is Seraphine still a werewolf? Does Andy lock her up every month? It's baffling. The theatrical ending is terrible. In the end, I wanted to be a contrarian, and I wanted to recommend this movie. I came in ready to recommend this movie no matter what, and I can't. It's just that bad. An American Werewolf in Paris is a solid not recommend.
Now, I've heard, and some of the reasons why we sat on this movie for years, is that they were close at one point in the last decade on making either a remake or a part three.
It was said in 2016 that Max Landis, son of John Landis, would be writing and directing a remake of the film.
Oh, he got canceled, though.
Yeah, he got canceled. In 2017, he tweeted he'd completed the first draft of the remake script, but shortly after that, a lot of women came out and said he emotionally and sexually abused them, and he has disappeared. I guess he's like teaching a filmmaking class in LA now, but he is not working.
I mean, he should have disappeared for Bright.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah. Yep. Now, in 2019, it was said that Robert Kirkman, who did the Walking Dead comics, was going to be producer for a new reboot of American Werewolf in London. That's 6 years ago now. So I think that this is being sat on. But I have my own theories that werewolf movies are going to come back. Just prognosticating, I have a feeling that Lee Winnell's werewolf movie is going to do well. And I think what's going on in the country is going to lead to a revival of the werewolf movie. The person who lives next door to you isn't what you think they are kind of movie. So maybe it'll come back.
I mean, Night Bitch is out this weekend. I mean, Amy Adams, Oscar nominee, is playing Rabid Dog. So yeah, they're out there. They're making these movies.
Yeah, American Werewolf, it could come back, but I'm not sure if it's really got the legs for it. I mean, it's remembered by our generation. I don't hear it talked about that much. They haven't made new toys and collectibles for it since the late 90s. It comes out on home video time and again, but I don't know if people have the love for this one to bring it back.
It won the first Oscar for makeup effects. It will always have a place. It influenced so much of the 80s. I definitely think that it is a touchstone. I mean, I think what you're getting at is my review as well. Is there enough story there to build upon? I think they'll have to really rework it. I think that they will have to think about other characters than David and really expand the story, which will change it quite dramatically. But maybe that's good. Maybe you don't even make it a comedy. Maybe you lean into the horror. All I know is we're going to lean into the comedy in about a month. We're taking a break from werewolf movies because we got a whole lot of theatrical stuff, including animated Lord of the Rings, Sonic the Hedgehog movie. We're going to, for patrons, be covering Barry Lyndon, the Stanley Kubrick movie, and of course, the new Nosferatu movie are all coming out in the weeks ahead. And then we will get to Teen Wolf.
The opposite of less scary, I think. Even more comedy.
Yeah, definitely doing the comedy thing. Don't tell me that this is a horror comedy. It's a comedy comedy when we got Alex P. Keaton growing fur and fangs and trying to be a basketball player in high school.
Yep, loved it as a child. This may be my Goonies, Arnie. Like, will I like it as an old man now?
Always a risky thing to go back to childhood faves.
So thank you again for your support. And as Stuart said, it's going to be a few weeks, but then we're going to be getting into the court with Michael J. Fox and starting the Teen Wolf trilogy of reviews. Thank you again for donating. We couldn't do the show without you. It means the world to us that you guys come back week after week to listen and for these bonus reviews. So thanks for the ride, sir. You have lovely sheep.
We can't let them go.
Should the world know our business?
It's murder, then.
Then murder it is.
It's in God's hands now.
Thank you again for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus review.
Dumbass kids, they never appreciate anything you do for them.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating and putting out new shows without missing a single episode in over 300 weeks.
It was the sweetest, most courageous, and selfless thing anyone's ever done for me.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Why the hell are you so quick to disbelieve me? You think I'm crazy?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
The whole community is hiding the truth of what actually happened up there.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
Whoa, check out the talent, man.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Will not be threatened by a walking meatloaf.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Hey, you.
That's enough!
That's enough!
I guess he's like teaching a filmmaking class in LA now, but he is not working.
I mean, he should have disappeared for Bright.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah. Yep.
He did write World War Z, the novel, right?
No, that's Max Brooks. That's Mel Brooks' son.
Oh, I'm confusing my, yeah. Yeah. Which privileged kid?
Yeah. Wrong Max.